Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History Number 2. Selma Berkman and Estelle Kremer are interviewing Joseph M. Katz on July 16, 1979.
Would you please give us your name and address?
Joseph M. Katz. My residence address is Gateway Towers here in Pittsburgh.
Mr. Katz, in order to find out something about you, we'd like to know something about your background, your parents, your brothers, your sisters, any ancestors, grandparents, so forth, that you can recall.
Unfortunately, Russian Jews, due to Pale of Settlement and possibly other rules and regulations and habits, kept very little history. And although by instinct I'm a historian and have attempted to learn about Jews from the time of the diaspora on, I've learned very little about my ancestors. My parents and their forebears had been born in Russia. However, I learned at a funeral oration of a relative some years ago in Philadelphia who was able to trace the ancestry of my mother's side, that they had fled the Inquisition and had wended their way eastward to Italy, and one branch had moved to Russia and another branch had gone to Palestine. On my father's side, I could get very little history beyond three generations ago.
What was your mother's maiden name?
My mother's maiden name was Averbeck.
And her first name?
Sarah.
S-A-R-A-H?
Yes.
And your grandparents, did you know them?
Yes, I do. I remember my maternal grandparents, Max Averbeck. I remember visiting him and his factory in Chelsea, Massachusetts, when I was a child of probably 5 or 6. And my grandmother, who lived in Pittsburgh until she passed away many years ago.
And her first name?
Bessie.
Now, your father's parents, you...
Joseph, for whom I am named. And I'm embarrassed to say I don't recall my grandmother's name. I'm glad you asked the question. I'll research it.
They were in Russia, or they never came to the United States?
My parents?
Your grandparents.
On my mother's side, yes. On my father's side, he became an orphan at the age of 12. And as a sad, almost macabre point of history in the family, they lived in a town called Tamashpol.
How do you spell that?
T-A-M. I'll have to write it.
All right.
T-O-M-A-S-H-P-O-L.
Russia.
Russia. Tamashpol had been Romania, had been a part of Romania on the Russian border, but had been taken over in their internecine warfare, fair is plural, and was then part of Russia. It seems that his parents, my grandparents, were visited when he was a small boy of 12. By various relatives, and unknowingly they had brought typhus with them, and the entire family was wiped out except two, my father and his sister.
What business was this grandfather?
He was a farmer, and surprisingly, if I may continue on the European history, very keenly interested in family history, and I made notes for 7 years. Wanted to know about the weather, how they lived, what their habits were. I learned that my grandfather had owned a plot of land, which my father referred to as a farm, but everything being relative, I never really got the size of it. But because of Pale of Settlement laws, as you well know, Jews were not permitted to own land, but it was owned in a clandestine manner illegally. And it was in the name of, my father referred to the man as the Puretz, P-U-R-E-T-Z. I've never gotten, Selma, the real definition of the term Puretz. I think it's a princely kind of name of a great landowner who was fond of my grandfather. And at any rate, my father, Samuel Katz, became an orphan at the age of 12 and supported his older sister, Frida, who preceded him in age by 2 years, and himself. And my dad told me he used to carry sacks of grain that weighed as much as he did up a ladder into a barn.
Excuse me, what did Puretz? Puretz, the landowner's name?
No, that's a term.
A term, the Puretz. And what did he do for your grandfather? He helped him own his land or what?
He kept it in his name, get away from the authorities.
In his own name, in the landowner's name.
In the landowner's name, right. You recall from history, in those days, landowners owned provinces, maybe areas larger than Allegheny County. At any rate, my dad continued to act as a farmer. And as a sidelight, after he moved to America as a youngster, I recall, wherever we lived, he had huge gardens, everything, including pigeons, chickens, geese, ducks.
Did your father have any education in Russia?
No, no formal education. It would be unique if he did, because the Pale of Settlement laws prevented any Jew from attending a public school. They had to attend their own parochial schools, mm-hmm. for primarily biblical learning.
Right, and he did that?
Yes.
And his religious education at that age, was he, or had his family been religious and taught him Judaism?
Oh, yes, absolutely. He was an Orthodox devout Jew until his death.
Did he meet your mother in Russia?
Yes, he did.
What was her name?
Her name was Sarah.
Oh, that's right.
And her father was a well-to-do. Perhaps we ought to put quotes around well-to-do. Everything being relative, I suppose if you were worth $25,000 and you were a billionaire. At any rate, he was a grain merchant. I suppose he plied his trade within the limitations of that period. However, he emigrated. As many Russian males did prior to their wives. He emigrated to America, I believe, around, he told me he was here during the Panic of 1907, so it had to be prior to that. But believe it or not, my grandmother and my Aunt Rachel and my Uncle David did not arrive in America until 1920. Apparently, like many breadwinners, he kept sending funds home, and they had all kinds of reasons for not leaving at that moment. When they did leave, it was at the outbreak of World War I, and they were in a German concentration camp for 2 or 3 years as they wended their way westward and left Rotterdam in approximately 1920 for the United States. In the case of my parents, and Selma, you raised the question as where my father met my mother, their towns were adjoining one another, or very close by, mm-hmm. and the town was Yampol.
How do you spell it?
I-A-M-P-O-L-E. I recall how startled I was one day.
That's one town. Now, what's the other one?
Tamashpol,
oh, I see.
My father's
okay.
town.
Okay.
And these could be signified as shtetls.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall one day listening to my car radio coming to my office during World War II, and I was astounded that the name Yampol, which in Yiddish my parents called Yampala, with the accenting and the E not being silent, that the Germans had come into that town. Mm-hmm. It was primarily, I learned, oddly enough, 2 years ago from my masseur at the Harmony Club in New York, who had just emigrated. He knew Yampol intimately, But I can come back to another moment when I discovered relatives in Israel. See, unfortunately, we have very few relatives in our family. Our relatives could be counted on.
Well, tell me before we go ahead. Now, your mother had a brother, David, a sister, Rachel,
and another sister, Belle. It was the three of them and my grandmother, not mm-hmm. two of them,
right.
who came to America together, and it took them 6 or 7 years, to about 6 years, to arrive. Caught in the crosswinds of World War I.
Right. Now, your father had how many brothers or sisters?
He had one brother and one sister.
Did they ever arrive, get to the United States?
Never.
No.
The brother disappeared during World War I. The sister remained in Russia. There was active correspondence between my Aunt Frieda, whom I had never met, and my father up until sometime during World War II. During interaction and correspondence with his sister and others, he learned that my sister had passed, that his sister had passed away.
Mm-hmm. May I just ask another question before you keep going? You said the two towns were near each other, but you didn't say did they know each other as children.
They did not.
When they met?
As adults.
Mm-hmm.
What was the last?
That the sister corresponded until World War II.
Oh, yes.
passed away.
They remained as Russians, and I understand that their children became distinguished members in academia, lawyers, doctors, scholars, and so forth. We have never had contact with one another. And even when Agnes and I went to Russia 10 years ago on a visit, we had no way of tracing them. And their name is Katz, too, because my sister's maiden name was Katz, married a gentleman named Katz.
Father's sister.
Is that the one that survived the typhus?
Yes.
Your father?
My father and his sister
survived the typhus, but that brother who died before the typhus?
The brother who disappeared.
Disappeared before the typhus?
No, he survived the typhus, too.
All right,
coming back now.
Yes. And his name, can you recall that?
I do not. It's a pity my sister Jeanette isn't here. She has more family history.
I must tell you that I'm friendly with Jeanette, and I said I'm going to interview your brother about it. She says, oh, you could have come to see me. I could tell you what
she had. You know, I thought this might relate to, as I said earlier, as a sequel to the I Am a Book. And Jeanette, who is, there's no daughter that I can think of more attentive to her parents than Jeanette. She was there every single day, except when she was on holiday. And even for years, cooked. She had her own family to raise. And she would be privy to information, not that I wasn't privy to it, but she was there constantly.
Yes. Now, tell us about your siblings, your brothers and sisters.
All right. In the pre-pill days, my mother, like women of her generation, had many children. There were six of us. And five of us were around and very active. Very unfortunately, a favorite sibling, my brother Harry, was killed after the war. After he returned, he had a farm in near Butler and was riding a horse one day, a new horse of his, and just accidentally fell off the horse, and by a chance of maybe thousands to one, he was kicked by the horse. He never regained consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Your parents were married in what year?
Let's see. I was born in 1913. They were married in 1912.
All right. And so you are the oldest.
I am.
And you were born in this same town of Taj Mahal?
No, in Yampol.
Yampol. I see. Then your father and mother lived
in Yampol. They may have lived They may have lived with my grandparents. That I'm not certain of. You can check Jeanette on that. Mm-hmm.
Then, at that point, your father was not the farmer. He was in the grain business, possibly?
No, he was still a farmer.
I see. All right, then the next child.
let's see. Chronologically, there was Harry, the one I told you about who was killed.
He was after you.
After me.
Mm-hmm.
And chronologically after him was Emmanuel. And after Manny was Hyman. Then Jeanette. And the baby of the family, William.
Can you recall your early life? Did you come directly to Pittsburgh? That's
yes.
The first question.
Yes.
When you were how old did you come here?
11 months.
And
why did they come here?
Good question, because I've researched that many times. My mother's uncle was a gentleman who had a jewelry store in Pittsburgh.
His name?
Louis Aberbeck. But he never lived in urban Pittsburgh. He was always in small towns, and I think that was in Hermony, Pennsylvania, which is somewhere at coal mining town near our country, near Westmoreland. Now, my father preceded my mother and I. And I think the story is very interesting. Being somewhat of a patriot, I was always disenchanted with stories I'd heard about Jews not trying to avoid the army. That was probably a major reason for emigration. But the deeper I studied it, following the assassination of, beginning with Alexander II and the first great wave of pogroms was started in 1880, which followed the first revolution of immigration to America, where the hugest wage of immigration occurred in the year 1881. Continued through the, say, the Kushnev program of 1907, I believe. At any rate, I was hoping my father wasn't involved in that. And fortunately, at least for my feeling, I was childish, I must say, as a mature, so-called successful man for even thinking that way. In his case, because he owned this land, and he was now about in his early 20s.
In 1881, you're talking. When are you talking about?
No,
in 19.
I'm switching now to 1913
or 14.
After I was born, my father related this to me. It was almost like yesterday. I can just picture he and I being in his living room, and he is explaining how he came here. A boyhood friend of his became the police superintendent of his village. And he came to him one day and he said, Sam, there's going to be a pogrom here tomorrow. I want you to tell your family to go into hiding. And they have already discovered you've been double-crossed, that you own this land, and you're going to be a target. We suggest you leave immediately and go over to Romania, which was nearby. And my father did that. And he said he waited for weeks. His news came back and forth. It was unsafe for him to return. And finally, in a family conclave, they didn't have telephones, I suppose. Somehow, however, they had their underground system of communications. It was decided that he would leave for America and come to a city called Pittsburgh because his father-in-law's brother had a jewelry store here, and he could somehow put him into commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And mother and I came over in June of 1913. My father was telling me one day how fearful he was then because the Great War was started on August 31. The rumblings that occurred during that period, there was fear of submarine warfare because, if you recall, few of us do remember it. I had a research history. I thought it was between Germany and another country. Between Germany and Russia. That was the start of World War I. And We landed in the Boston Harbor, and the proof of date and age and everything else occurred when I had one of my lawyers years ago go to the immigration department. I want to know the name of the boat, too.
Yeah.
Sure enough, I got a Xerox copy of it. My name was in Yiddish, Yossel, Y-O-S-S-E-L, which is Yiddish for Joseph. And I was 11 months old, gave my mother's age, and she came along with a sister-in-law of hers.
And what is the sister-in-law's name?
Her name was Fanny Averback.
What was the boat's name, do you remember?
No, I'm sorry. The sister-in-law-to-be. That's right. She was single. She came over here to marry her boyfriend, who lived in Pittsburgh, but came to Boston, where the marriage was held. He was there to greet his bride-to-be, Hyman Averback, my mother's brother. He has long since passed away. It's interesting because for myself, I'm recounting family history.
Right, yeah. Now, as you grew up with all of the brothers and sisters, tell us something about your home atmosphere as to religious or economic cultural ideas?
She's asking that, when they came to Pittsburgh, where did you settle and where did they live that the other children were born?
There were three of us who were in Pittsburgh first. My mother, father, and myself. And we lived on Kirkpatrick Street. There's an interesting sidelight, and I'm going to zig and zag because things come to mind. At a recent director's meeting of mine, say within the last year, one of my directors who lives in Washington was formerly a Pittsburgher, a very distinguished lawyer in Washington today, Leonard Marks. And he and I grew up together. We went to the same high school, Fifth Avenue High, together. We went to Pitt together. He went on to law school. So after dinner, he said he'd like to go back to where he lived. I said, that's a great idea. I want to retrace where I live. So we went to his house. It was 245 Nicholas Street, and he was shocked. He hadn't been there in a generation. He left Pittsburgh before the war started. And he heard, no, about 1941. And he said, yeah, I thought we lived in the bigger house. I said, all right, Leonard, I'm going to tell you something. I lived at 1827 Cliff Street once upon a time. I drove a Rolls Royce down there about 10 years ago. I just got my car, and I know I'm in the 11th year now. And I went to 1827, it's amazing how I remember that number, Cliff Street, which then I thought was a palatial street. Pre-World War I. And I knocked on the door. First of all, I peered around the back. My father had a farm there. That house ran from, here's Cliff Street, here's Arsena Street, here's a 17th Street incline. So the house was here. This was the house. And the land for a farm was equal to our parking lot here. Went all the ways back to City Block. I recall I even had a Martin house up there for a bird loft. I remember as a kid, my pigeons were stolen. Well, at any rate, Marks and I went first to Kirkpatrick Street. That was now an empty parking lot. From there, we went to Robert Street. This is all walking distance, really. You know where that is?
Did you live on Robert?
On Bedford Avenue, really.
On Bedford you live.
And maybe two.
That's after Kirkpatrick.
Quite.
Then on Bedford
Avenue. By that time, my father was prosperous enough to buy a house for $10,000, which he paid for without mortgage. And that was a block away on Cliff Street.
On Cliff Street,
And what did your father do at that time?
My father then was, I'm going back. When he came to America, if I can start back a little bit, he went to my great uncle, who had a jewelry store. He said, Sam, because you speak Russian, Polish, Slavish, everything but English, and Yiddish, of course. He spoke about six languages, but they were all languages that were melded into one another. be like a Swiss today, speaks of no less than three languages to exist. You should be able to, I'll give you a satchel full of jewelry, go out of the country, can speak to these people. He became a fairly successful salesman. He made a lot of money, I don't know what that meant, maybe $50 a week. And now let's see, on Cliff Street, trying to determine. Oh, I remember something. When I was a little boy, I must have been this big, 3 or 4, he had a store now, a jewelry store, in Curtisville, adjoining Russellton number 2. Someday I've got to have my driver take me out there.
In what community did you say? Curtisville?
Curtisville. That was a mining town. Apparently my father's customers were in mining areas.
Right.
And he opened the store there. And I recall, I have a vision of a hotel, a white frame hotel on a hill. My parents were awakened in the middle of the night. I got up with them. I couldn't have been over 3 years old. My mother claimed that even when I came to America, I was fairly fluent in speaking. And I would shop with her as almost like a semi-adult by the time I was about 3. Of course, mothers always exaggerate. And I remember seeing the fire in all the people. I remember one thing. I'm 66 now, as of last week. So I had that was 63 years ago. I will never forget this. These people loved my dad so much. They called him by his Russian name. I don't know what it is. And with their coats and everything, they tried to put the fire out. The whole block made up of wooden buildings. Barbershop, I think, and maybe a pool hall, jewelry store, grocery store, all burnt to the ground. And in daylight, and I'd been there all during the middle of the night, the morning. My mother probably forgot that I was there. These people went into the ashes and pick up a ring or a bracelet, walk over and hand it to my father. Today that would never happen.
What's the...
Can you recall your early religious environment or
I would say it was
atmosphere?
Poor. It was really poor because I was a leader of our family, fortunately or unfortunately. And I had a very searching mind and didn't believe in the rituals as a small child. And I questioned it. My father was always angry at me, slapped me and everything else. And I would say to him, "Now, you're reading Hebrew. Can you tell me, that open the book, and what this word is?" He said, "Bang, none of your business." By rote. Here the other day, Jeanette and Manny and Hi and I were at the Tree of Life for memorial service for my mother, yesterday morning, Saturday night, and Yahrzeit. And I said to Jeanette, "You know, I can't even read an aleph from a bays, and I'm trying to read the English, and I can't get the real meaning." I said, "You know, it's a pity that the service isn't in English so that we could understand it." And I said, "I'll bet you there isn't one person in this room out of maybe 15 or 20 who knows what he's reading." So those were my doubts
now.
In those days.
Yes.
As a result, I was a very poor student in Cheder.
But you were sent to Cheder.
Yes, but I think I played hooky all the time.
Do you remember the congregation?
Yes, I do. It was on Miller Street. It was the Russian Shul on Miller off Center Avenue. I recall because when I was bar mitzvah, my father took me there so I wouldn't miss school. I went to Fulton School out in East End. And we got up very early in the morning, like 6 o'clock in the morning, to go down there. My father brought the traditional bottle of Old Overholt. Seems how they took everything neat in those days. And we went down there, and I went through the rigmarole. And that was the last time I was involved in religion, really, until one day Morris Balder called me when Marshall, who will be 40 next month, was 6 years old. And he said, "Why don't you join the temple?" I knew the temple well. I'd been their scoutmaster. And I said, in fact, I became an Eagle Scout at the temple. I was in the troop there. And I said to him, "Oh, Morris, I don't want to bother with it." He said, "Well, isn't your son going to go to Sunday school?" told Agnes about it. She said, join up. So we really had no real religious training at home.
When you were you bar mitzvah, is that when your father went with you?
Yes.
That was a bar mitzvah.
Correct.
But you observed the holidays and that?
The principal holidays. Yeah. So we always had a Seder at home.
Did you observe all the holidays at home, your mother?
Only the... my mother may have benched Lach when I was a child, but I think at one point she stopped that too. We had a kosher home. My mother was much more broad-minded in that respect. My father really towed the line on that to a point that he wouldn't eat many meals at my home. His dishes were strict. When he changed maids, he lost maids because he was so strict with them because they'd mixed one dish with the other.
In other words, would you say that your father was also a strict disciplinarian?
He was. Well, no. I'd say a tolerant disciplinarian. And he was religious. He became more religious. He wasn't too religious, I have to say in retrospect. Check Jeanette on that. Killed my brother Harry. Was killed. Terrible blow to the family. I mean, all of us mourned.
When
years.
Was that?
In May of 1946. He'd been in the service for years, and
when people heard he was killed,
they thought maybe in the army. No, just came home.
But did your father go back to religion, you say, after the death?
More so. In fact, he was a president of a synagogue. In order to get him to, from being reelected, I had a... From